Our fifth case of today is United States against Lee. Mr. Gutierrez.
Yes. May it please the court, distinguished colleagues, government. Judge, this is a case where I raise four issues. Two of them are Booker issues, which pretty much counsel has conceded, except for that flitting fourth point. And the
except in your case, and as we know, Judge Castillo is certainly an expert on the guidelines. He seems to say, I'm forced to sentence you only to 120 months, right, which is a statutory maximum. He would have gone
higher.
And so I have trouble on this record seeing where there's any chance he would have said, oh, now that I know I have discretion, I'm only going to give you 115. What reason is there on this record to think that?
Well, Judge, I kind of feel like the sailor who comes across the sign that says, beyond there, there'd be dragons. Certainly, we don't want a situation where we go back and Judge Castillo actually finds the same sentence or...
Well, we can't exceed the statutory
maximum.
That's
the problem. Yeah, he says, I'm stuck here.
Wish he could.
That's right.
But that's why... those comments are comments that make me feel... As confident as one can be that the chances that he would exercise his discretion in a manner favorable to the defendant are very low. So low, indeed, that on this kind of review, perhaps the government this time might be right, that there really is no reason to think anything would be different.
Well, certainly there appeared to be some type of sense that I also got that the judge would have departed upward if he could have beyond.
In other words, this is in the set of cases where any constraint, it turned out to be the statutory constraint, was favorable to the defendant. And if in the future, if people situated similarly to your client are going to be worse off.
Yes. Yes,
not clear
if it were a guideline. If it were a guideline ceiling,
yeah,
as opposed to
the statutory max.
Right.
So that's why.
But it's awfully hard to say that this is where a constraint injured the defendant.
Well, this, thank heaven for the statutory maximum. But that's why, Judge, I wanted to focus on the on the issue that dealt with Alcantara, which is the impossibility standard. So I go from the one, which is a absolute bar, to the other one that is the impossibility standard. So I'm here to plead my case for impossibility, Judge. Certainly, I view this as a issue of proportionality. So, for instance, if instead of the bulletproof vest and the .38 handgun, it would have been a Mardi Gras headdress and a 13th century Saxon battle axe, I think that the court might be able to see how missing that by two trained police officers might be an impossibility.
But Mr. Gutierrez, these cargo pants, I don't know how much time you spend looking at them, but they're baggy, they're huge, they have these gigantic pockets down on the legs. Impossibility is a really tough standard, and it's imaginable to me that even something as large as this gun could fall to the bottom of one of those leg pockets. Right. I can't even tell if there are two separate pockets or one pocket involved here. But I don't find it all the way out at the end of impossible. Maybe unlikely. I mean, you know, there are a whole series of other words you might use, but the standard you're arguing for is a tough one.
Well, the difference is, Judge, and the difference is the retrieval of four little baggies.
Do we know for sure it's all the same pocket? I mean, you know, there are pockets up by the waistband, then the cargo pockets are down on the legs.
Right, but it wasn't just that the handgun was missed, Judge. The handgun was missed by two police officers, never seen the gun at the scene, incidentally, only took the alleged reprimand at the scene, but never actually saw the gun at the scene. And there was the matter of the bulletproof vest worn underneath. I mean, is it a Mardi Gras headdress? No, but it is a bulletproof vest that was also omitted, that was also not seen at the scene. And I guess this is the kind of case where it's kind of like the lawyers saying that this is sour grapes, you know, I lost, I shouldn't have lost this case, and terrible me for not being a better defense lawyer, and kudos to my opponent who did a very good job of getting the conviction, Judge. But again, this is one of those cases where I just couldn't pin down the floating duck. I couldn't stop the machinery long enough to take a clean shot at it, meaning that these officers between themselves kept saying, no, he had the ball, no, he had the ball. So it's a case of the cup going around and around, and I'm arguing impossibility, but certainly what's really going on is that it was tough to pinpoint from the very beginning on the motion to suppress. It was tough to pinpoint when one officer is saying, look, I searched him, and then when it comes down to the day of trial, when if we're trying to prove a negative, you got to concentrate on the one who said, I searched him. And then on the eve of trial, they say, well, no, I really didn't search him. I meant the I categorical, we searched him. So it was a shifting landscape, Judge. And I am saying that this is more like the case of proportionality, whether a handgun and a bulletproof vest can be the equivalent of finding a needle in a haystack or in two different pockets. Or is it more like, you know, can this really have happened? Can two police officers who claim they performed a custodial search, and that's why I keep going to the handcuffs, because this was a custodial search. It wasn't like they were running around and the guy was trying to pat him down while he's waiting to get around the corner or something. This was a full-blown custodial search with two trained police officers, one of them who had initially claimed at the preliminary hearing in state court that he had conducted the search.
So and you were able to impeach with some of that, though, weren't you?
Yes, Judge. And
the judges, and I thought these other officers essentially said, you know, we blew it. You know, we didn't do the kind of job we should have done. Didn't, I mean, they said that, right? They said they got distracted, you know, somebody else was running down the street, whatever.
Yeah, they did say that, Judge. They did say that, and you're absolutely right. In the end, Judge Castillo believed them and did not believe my client and ordered him to get a 2-point upward enhancement for obstruction of justice, which I thought was unfair because what he was doing is barely saying, no, I didn't have it on me. It was the exculpatory no that landed him a 2-point upward adjustment for obstruction of justice. So, you know, maybe Judge Castillo is acutely aware that if he had gone with the guidelines, it would have been some 48 months to 50 some months more. And maybe this is the type of case where I should, you know, keep my mouth shut and be careful for what I ask for. But I do want you, when you go back and decide who's going to write this, I want you to remember that Mardi Gras headdress and the Saxon battle axe, because those could not have been missed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Gerland.
May it please the Court, Michael Gerland on behalf of the United States.
You're not carrying any Saxon battle axes, are you?
No, and unlike Finley, I'm not wearing body armor, nor am I carrying a gun. It's the position of the government, Your Honors, that the evidence in this case was more than sufficient for the jury to return the verdict it returned. There were three witnesses to the crime in this case, three officers, the officer who retrieved the gun, a second officer who saw the gun being retrieved, and a third officer who was an ear witness, if you will, who heard the retrieving officer make the statement, he's got a gun on him. Their testimony was corroborated by the physical evidence, by the gun, by the fact that the defendant was wearing body armor at the time of his arrest, consistent with the testimony that he had a gun. And, in fact, the physical evidence and the testimony was corroborated by the defendant's post-arrest statements, statements to the effect that he was a robber of drug dealers, someone who likely would have a gun. So I don't think there's any question that there was a sufficient basis for the verdict rendered in this case. As to the issue of impossibility, the officers were very candid about the job they did, both good and bad. The first officer who approached the defendant merely seized the drugs that he saw the defendant buy. He did not do a search of the defendant. The second officer testified, in his words, to his quote-unquote screw-up. He checked the defendant's waistband, and then he was distracted by another individual who needed to be searched.
The waistband is where he found the Mardi Gras headdress?
No, he didn't find anything.
I must have misunderstood this.
He didn't find anything. And the body armor actually did not go down to the waistband, which is why he didn't detect it during the search. And when a third officer came along to put the defendant into the paddy wagon, he felt the body armor. He conducted a thorough search. He found the gun low down on the right side of the defendant. And the jury clearly found the officers credible, and I submit to you they were very credible because they were candid about their mistakes in all of the arguments raised by the defendant on appeal, including the argument about the pants. Clearly, information about his pants wasn't suppressed from him. There was no Brady violation. That evidence wasn't lost because of any misconduct on the part of the government. As the defendant indicated, Cook County gave his pants away after he failed to claim them or have someone pick them up. So there simply is no argument that the evidence was not sufficient to sustain the verdict. As to the Booker issue, this is clearly a case where the court can look at the record and determine that under prong three, regardless of whose burden of proof it is, and I'll spare the court the Groundhog Day argument, but with regard to this case, it's absolutely clear that Judge Castillo, if he could, would have given defendant Marcus Lee a stiffer sentence. He was disappointed about the fact that the defendant is going to be out on the street in 10 years, and the guidelines range in this case was well above what he was able to sentence, and there's no need for any type of remand, even a limited remand, to find out what the judge would do, because it's clear from the record what he would do. And since the defendant cannot establish prong three, he can't meet his burden, since regardless, it's evident from the record that there was no prejudice, I would submit under Booker that the not only the conviction but the sentence should be affirmed and the case should not be remanded. And if there are no more questions, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Mr. Gutierrez?
No. Well,
we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been to your client and to the court. Thank you.